This is broadcast number 623. It's November the 14th, 1983, and it's Mae Brussel, KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. And we will discuss for about one moment what happened a year ago tonight. That's what we usually do. That was broadcast number 571, November 15th, 1982. I was talking about Mr. Begin, the Prime Minister of Israel, and how his wife was buried in the brown shirt, how they were part of the right-wing Zionist, the Beitar Zionist group in Poland. And in this past year, he's resigned. There had been a lot of scandals and pressures on Menachem Begin, so he stepped down from office at this time. There's an article by Alex Coburn in the Village Voice, a letter from Albert Einstein, December the 4th, 1948, warning about Menachem Begin. It was signed by Einstein and a long list of people in the United States telling about his work with Mussolini in Italy and his terrorism and trained by the anti-Semitic Ergun and how he worked with the fascists in Poland and Italy and was trained to murder and so forth. There also was an item about Einstein in Nation magazine a few months ago. The FBI creating a dossier that Albert Einstein was responsible for the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby. This is that revisionist history that's going to follow. The French had stories that Jews ate French children, and when all the dust settles down on the international fascism, we can have this wonderful story that Einstein moved to Hollywood to make the movie industry communist, and that he was part of the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby. Nothing better than having an American hero like Charles Lindbergh and then a Jew like Albert Einstein and try to link them together through FBI documents. So Einstein's name came up this year. Last year at this time we were talking about Ronald Reagan releasing the Hitler Papers, a list of 10.7 million members of the Nazi Party that he's sending back to Germany. And then this year we find out that the Los Angeles Police Department is filling documents of and other police departments around the country into Western Gold's expensive computers, and they're going to, via Mr. Wigner and Nazis on the board of Western Gold's, into the BND Nazi organization right now in Nazi Germany, the remnants of Nazi Germany, the Galen operation, so that there wasn't much difference or leave off of time of collecting names and data. So what they have on the one hand are the true blue Nazis, and then on the other hand, they have the people who protest the anti-nuclear position and the that are for abortion or object to police brutality. They've collected these people into a category that they feed into computers out of Philadelphia, Washington, Chicago, all the major cities. Last week, I gave reference to two magazine articles coming out on the printed sheet. I put 1983, a minor correction. It's 1984. The Hustle will be out in 2 weeks. There's a story in there about Larry McDonald and the Flight 007. And then the magazine Rebel should be out next week. It's the anniversary of John Kennedy's death. And Larry Flint said that it will be out by next week. He called me this week, Saturday night, told me I should be very happy and proud. He's very pleased with the article I did. I was happy to do it. It made me feel very good. And to summarize in 50 pages, 20 years' work, or the conclusion of 20 years' work, is more difficult than just writing some current news event to extract what you want. But luckily, in my own mind, it came together just the way I wanted it, and I was really happy. And for those of you who are long world watchers, some of you have been taking these broadcasts. I've been on the air, this is my 13th year. And if you're a world watcher, at least 5 years or longer, I'll send you a subscription to Rebel for your holiday gift, and you'll get one a week. It'll be similar to Newsweek and the Time magazine. But for all of you long listeners who've sent me books and articles and got a lot of filing cabinets for me, and David Emery, the copying machine, the IBM typewriter, a few people have really come across and done some wonderful things. A few people have done that, and others have sent clippings and articles and books and constantly feeding me information. So you will get a subscription to Rebel. And as soon as I know, I'll write down LA and I'll get that in the mail for you. If you've been you know, a listener and a supporter of psychologically. It's important as any kind of money you can send is just saying, I believe in what you're doing. I want your tapes every week. I want to know what's going on in the world. And my way of saying thank you is to give you a subscription to that, and then we will share an article a week, and we can keep these things as well as on tape in the printed page. I mentioned last week the article in Penthouse, a brief mention of a book by Ashley Montague, The Dehuman Syndrome, that's coming out of McGraw-Hill. If you want to look up the details of that case for you serious researchers, January 21st, 1979, in the Los Angeles Herald is a description of the lawsuit over the brain surgery by Dr. Vernon Mark, the chief of neurosurgeon at Boston Hospital, and Dr. Frank Irvin, who's at UCLA at the present time. And it's that story of Leonard Keeley, K-I-L-L-E, and the electrodes in his head, and how he was damaged and made literally a vegetable, a brilliant inventor. And he complained that what they did to his head would interfere with his inventions at MIT and with his writing at Harvard, where he worked at Harvard University. So they put him into Boston Hospital and chopped up his brain. And if you want to look up that article and know the exact terminal man, the real terminal man, that's who it is. One brief item on DeLorean. There's quite a bit in the news. They're trying to find that missing money in Detroit. The Houston Post said documents seized during a court order may locate more than $18 million missing. They're trying to come up with that $17.67 million, rather, that was earmarked for DeLorean car. And now they say that it may be at Chase Manhattan. Would you believe that? They've subpoenaed Chase Manhattan. Of course, Chase Manhattan is involved with Mark Rich and a lot of other money scandals, and they're trying to locate this money. And then part of it was supposed to have been in the Rothschild Bank as October 2nd, 1979. Now, the lead I had about that money was that it came from, the money went to Klaus Barbie to pay for the dope, and Barbie put it in Joseph Mengele's bank account in Zurich, Switzerland. For those of you who don't have that back broadcast, you could get it. But if there's anything John J. McCloy, who was president of Chase Manhattan Bank, and Henry Kissinger don't want, are the links of Klaus Barbie and Henry Kissinger to cocaine in South America. So the fall guy may be the Chase Manhattan. So a little accessories after the fact, the Chase is, oh yeah, I just remembered that John DeLorean put some money in my bank in 1979. Is that the $17 million you want? That's an easy way out, but they have not explained the delivery in Zurich, Switzerland of the money that came from him that is missing, and so I'd like to know about that. There also is a story in the paper this week about Judge Newsom in San Francisco. It was written by Warren Hinkle, and it's about Justice William Newsom, W-E-N-E-W-S-O-M, of the State Court of Appeal. And he works with the Irish group, the IRA, and he was entertaining a person, Owen Caron, C-A-R-R-O-N, of the strong Irish resistance group, the Sinn Féin, S-I-N-N-F-E-I-N. And Caron was in San Francisco at a meeting with the IRA. He wasn't supposed to come to this country, entered illegally, but one of the people working with him and helping him is Judge Newsom from San Francisco. The article's called Leprechaun Judge. Well, Judge Newsom is the fellow that worked with J. Paul Getty and Otto von Bolschwing to set up the corporation TCI that Helene von Dahm worked for in California. Judge Newsom was very much part of that organization, and Otto von Bolschwing, the Nazi war criminal, came to this country, to New Jersey, and did a lot of work with Otto Skorzeny in Ireland. And at the time of the John DeLorean story, just a year ago last week, I had mention of the Irish connections of Arturkovich, the Nazi war criminal who got an Irish passport and went through Ireland with John DeLorean. And also, not to confuse you, John DeLorean is on the board of Chriscraft that owns 20% of 20th Century Fox, but the attorney for Chriscraft is a Simon Rifkin that set up TCI. If that doesn't confuse you too much, there is an Irish connection to TCI, to John DeLorean, to Otto Skorzeny, to Mr. Arturkovich, who I suspected DeLorean was seeing down in Southern California. And Simon Rifkin is the common denominator, also with Michael Sindona from the Vatican, so that the same Judge Newsom who worked with John Paul Getty, it probably still does, and Otto von Bolschwing and Simon Rifkin, who is the middleman between DeLorean and TCI, the attorney for both, this same Judge Newsom is working with the IRA and is active in San Francisco and is going to Ireland and evidently works with them, the leprechaun judge. So the network of the TCI that was set up when Von Dahm was put as the secretary to Ronald Reagan and the network of people are still very active, and every once in a while their name surfaces in the news. One short item, quite a while back, several years ago, that I saved and never had on the air, and just because Ronald Reagan was in Japan this week, I thought I'd bring it up, and Kissinger's name is in the news. It was April the 2nd, 1981. Japanese give Henry Kissinger $48 million to form a new foundation. Those who work to form the foundation are Henry Kissinger, former U.S. Secretary of State. A Japanese group will contribute $48 million for a new foundation to improve ties between the United States and Japan, $48 million for Henry Kissinger just a couple of years ago. Larry Flint calls me once in a while. I talk to him. I'm really concerned now that he's getting Rebel out. A few years ago, 1978, he got the ALA Free Press, and it was all about the John Kennedy assassination. And then 1 month later, when he goes to Georgia, he was shot. I didn't know him at that time period. I've only known him recently. But in the last short time I've known, the last 3 months, certain names come up that he mentions to me, and every one of them has to do with the past conspiracies and assassinations, and he's totally enclosed by these people. It's so dangerous, but you can't protect a person who's busy in a public life from every single person. But he mentioned having call or contact with Dr. Baden, one example, from New York City, and his wife. And I identified Baden as a dangerous man from the CIA, worked with the House Select Committee, a liar on the House Select Committee, protected those Nazi assassins that were publishing in Rebel this week. He is not separated from his wife by any fraction. They work together as a team in every sense. There's no such thing as a woman like that not knowing what he's doing. And anything they want to offer him or to contact him, this is the man that ordered the cremation of Rockefeller when I'm pretty sure he was poisoned in that little party he was having with these women and whatever it was. If he wasn't poisoned, the autopsy should have been done, and he was cremated on orders of Baden, who wasn't even in New York, was in California at the time. Mark Lane was contacting him again this week. Mark Lane kept valuable information from him. He should never let him go to Atlanta, Georgia, without bodyguards or vests or protection. Mark Lane came out of the woodwork on the anniversary of Kennedy's death, and I'm sure got wind through Don Fried and the whole network that he's ready to go some more on the Kennedy story. Chuck Ashman, the attorney, was in touch with him. Don Fried called from New York. Stay away. Tell Larry Flint, stay away. Check the Frank Sturgis, Chuck Ashman connections. Anyone who has anything to do with the past assassinations, I don't know a lot of people, but any of those people, Larry Flint has bodyguards. He's selective in his home, who comes in, who goes out. I would automatically hang up on anybody who had information and suppressed it 20 years. He mentioned another person in Texas he wanted me to talk to on the telephone, Mary Farrell. She's done research 20 years. I was in Dallas-Fort Worth, maybe 2 miles from her house, and wouldn't see her 10, 12 years ago. And he doesn't know what I know about Mary, and he says, call her. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. No way. This woman has suppressed. What has she written? What has she done? How is she supported? She has an enclave at her house of Bernard Fensterwald from the CIA and Gordon Novell. Novell went and Rush Harp. Rush Harp went to visit her and told me all about the visit and not to link the two together, but he had a demise not too long after, and he had stuff from her house that Gordon Novell allegedly had, and he wanted me to use it on the air, and it came from Mary's house. And I said, I won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. You never heard me put it on the air. You never heard me quote it. That isn't how I get my research. I don't deal with these people. They do what they want, and I do what I want. But leave me alone, and I don't want to be with them. Gordon Novell, I had to explain to Larry Flint, was wanted by Jim Garrison as part of the conspiracy with Clay Shaw and Guy Bannister and Oswald's doubles down New Orleans. And when he wanted to speak to the grand jury or testify, Novell fled to Washington and announced, I'm with the CIA, and went to Ohio to Rhodes, the governor, who was the one in charge of the Kent State slaughters. See, these people not only were part of the Kennedy thing, but blood and murders and things follow later with some of these people. And it's not just covering up the Kennedy. There's other deaths. It's like with Mark Lane, what about sitting out in the woods while 914 people are dying? I mean, how can you handle that or scream it, or why would you give up even talking about it? Why do you have to meet with these people? There's so many deaths that surround them. Their karma is so bad. Stay away from them. Any of you researchers, you can't gain anything from them. You lose a little yourself, and you can lose your whole life. And Gordon Novell has been CIA. He works with G. Gordon Liddy and Mitchell Werbel. I'm just mentioning six or seven people that Larry's mentioned on the phone in the last 2 weeks. And I want to jump through the wall, you know. What good are all the bodyguards, all the protection? If anybody calls and you know that they have a history of covering up the past, they may be dangerous in the future and you don't know it, but you don't have to make the same mistakes twice. My favorite poem, probably of all the poetry I have, is Carl Sandburg's advice of a father to a son. It says, you make certain follies or certain mistakes, but you learn from it, and you don't make the same mistake twice. Everyone can make a mistake, but you don't have to do the same ones twice. You don't have to walk in where people have a track record of working for the same kinds of Nazis that we're publishing and writing about. So my advice is stay away. Please, and don't let these people get around you. As long as you're doing good work, what do you need them for? Now, one of the news items, I brought in about 20 news items, but I'm not going to get to all of them, was that Larry McDonald's widow, the grieving widow, was defeated in the elections last week. Well, Larry Flynn had a big role in that. He helped finance the person that opposed her. He felt that she was wrong, that she's narrow, she's prejudiced, a one-track mind, and he helped support the person in the electoral system and put his money where it belonged and stood up for what he believed. And what you have, all of you from coast to coast who tape these broadcasts, is not a representative with a narrow mind in a slot. The next person who takes her place may turn out to be Jesse Helms. You go after him next. But you don't let a woman into that place. She's on the communication with the CIA and the State Department while her husband's plane is allegedly hijacked or over an island. They haven't even gotten the president up. So you know she knows more than even the president of the United States about what happened to Larry McDonald, this grieving widow who didn't have time to cry. So it's really courageous to stop that election, and he did, and that's the kind of work that's important. We don't all have a lot of money to stop elections, but we do have a voice to say what we want, and it's up to us to get out there and do it and use what's available. And I think the system is a paper tiger. The times that I've seen it used, it worked. And that's one of the things that encourages me so much and doesn't discourage me to throw everything in and say, what's the use, is that there are situations that can be altered and we should use them. Now, I'm going in at length to just an outline of the work I've done on the Granada affair, because the invasion of Granada, because I've spent the last week, night and day, till the early hours of the morning, and gotten it into a place where I can describe it, visualize it, and now begin to write a two-part article on it. Last week, I talked about the murders that were taking place before Mr. Bishop down in Central America and South America by the Central Intelligence Agency, before Mr. Maurice Bishop was murdered, how they were working, and how Lord Carrington, the co-partner of Henry Kissinger, was down in the Barbados making a deal as soon as Bishop was elected in 1979. That's when they decided he had to go. And then the military officials were slipped into place by Ronald Reagan for a military takeover. And I talked a little bit about the secrecy of the invasion of the people in the mental hospital. And since that time, I've gone through maybe 200 newspaper articles and found exactly what I wanted in those articles to explain what was going on at that mental hospital and why the press was not allowed there for 2 days and only visitation there afterwards. And I went through as much time would allow this week the comparisons to Jonestown and certain similarities of names and broken those down, and the medical school that was the excuse for the invasion and the role of Dr. Peter Byrne with Jimmy Carter. I talked about that last week, and then I broke it more carefully into detailed connections, and I'll give you just some of the outlines to get an overview of some parts of the story. There's a Georgia connection to this. Ronald Reagan doesn't go to play golf. He's at Camp David every weekend, and he knew he was going to invade. Before it went down, they'd made the decisions to do it early in October, and as I said before, either on 15th or 16th at the time of the World Series. So why did he go down to Georgia? When Reagan was governor at California, that garden plot to take over the government with the military, the government behind the government was based in Atlanta, Georgia. And Dr. Peter Byrne works in Atlanta, Georgia, out of Atlanta, Georgia, with Jimmy Carter. And that germ control center, which can be a terrible front for germs to be released in experimentations. And Jeffrey Byrne, the father of Peter Byrne, the doctor, works in Atlanta, Georgia, or did, until he went to be director of the medical school down there in Granada. And he worked on primates, a special center of primates. And I think of how Jim Jones allegedly got his money by selling these little monkeys around Indiana. And at the time, if you play back my tape on Jonestown, I asked how many little monkeys did Jim Jones sell before he had his buses and vans and was touring all over the United States with all this money. It came from somebody's monkeys. And also Dr. Delgado, who did the experimentations and mind control work from Yale and Navy Intelligence, worked with these primates and these monkeys. So Daddy Byrne, Jeffrey Byrne, was into the primates before he ran this medical school down there. And these guys are from Georgia. And also Lockheed, and Lockheed is the big conduit, along with the USA organization, which ties together for espionage's activity through Mr. Khashoggi and the various, remember, Thane Caesar from Lockheed, who shot the fatal shots at Robert Kennedy's back of his ear. Georgia is a key pivotal place for military intelligence and for the second government, the government behind the government, so that Ronald Reagan was in Georgia when all of this was taking place as a Georgia connection. There's also a London connection. The attorney that set up Jonestown, Tim Stone, went from Stanford University, and Stanford Research was involved in Jonestown, and went to London to pick up the money that began the leasing of Jonestown. Mr. Bishop, who was killed, was an attorney educated in London before he returned to Granada, so they knew his charm, his quality, his charisma. They knew him well in London, where Mr. Carrington from London was to go down to Barbados and set up the machinery with Harry Kissinger to get rid of Bishop. John Rees came over here. He was part of MI5, military intelligence, British intelligence. He came over from London in 1962 to latch on to Senator Larry McDonald. Representative Larry McDonald and Western Goals, and he and Louise Rees, she'd worked with Senator Joe McCarthy and the far right wing, and John Rees writes for the John Birch Society. He came from London. Mark Lane, in 1964, went to London to write his book, Rush to Judgment. And Mark Lane has put down all the other researchers. If you saw him on Nightline, a friend has sent for the transcript. They asked him, well, after 20 years, Mark, Ted Koppel says, who do you think killed Kennedy? And Mark Lane says, well, if you go to the grassy knoll, there's a puff of smoke, and everyone ran to the grassy knoll. Mark Lane was bonded to the grassy knoll. I think when his mother delivered him, he must have been the grassy. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Okay, Mark Lane, I'll get the transcript and read it to you. If you didn't see Nightline, he's bonded to the grassy knoll. Time stands still for Mark Lane. 20 years, he's on the knoll, okay? He went to London, and the introduction to his book was by you, Trevor Roper, of MI6, the British counterintelligence, the one who identified falsely the information in Hitler's bunker and swore that the new diaries of Adolf Hitler's were accurate. You, Trevor Roper, of British intelligence, wrote the introduction, it's on the cover and so forth and inside, of Mark Lane's book. He didn't write in the United States. He went to London to work with British intelligence. And as I say, Jonestown was set up in 1973-74. The United States government put up money, but the basic money came from London, going to London, and so that there's a lot of interesting connections in this geographical area, because Mark Lane, you see, again, is down in Jonestown when these 914 people are killed. I marked out for the article I'm doing the years 1976 to 77, when George Bush was director of the CIA, in 1978 and 79, when Jonestown was at height. 1976 to 77 is when they're getting ready to move them down there. And Jonestown was going full swing, and the medical school was set up in Granada in 1976-77 by Dr. Peter Byrne from Atlanta and London, and Jeffrey Byrne from Atlanta and London down there. And then something happened to the plans that were going so well in Granada, where Mr. Gary, G-A-I-R-Y, the fascist goon squad leader, was in power since the 50s. There was a coup there in 1979, March of 79, when Maurice Bishop took over. The people had enough of the maitre d', who became the managing governor, who is now going to come back into office there with his goon squad, the Mongoose Group. A terrorist group that will be put in by our CIA again. In March of 79, Maurice Bishop, the brilliant lawyer, became the head of Granada. And in January 79, Jonestown was completely splattered. It ended in November 78. And Jonestown collapsed, and the CIA and Mr. Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter and Peter Byrne and the whole cabinet of Ronald Reagan had to keep quiet. Peter Byrne worked with the health, education, and welfare, and the drug and mental problems. Well, they were all down in Jonestown. Mentally sick, the drugged, and you name it, but no mention in their bio of trying to work on that. And then in 1980, that same time period, right after that, Frank Nugan was murdered and the Nugan Bank collapsed. So that the money operations for the murders, for the CIA, for the intelligence system, folded or were diverted because the Jonestown thing broke like a big cancer bursting open, and Frank Nugan was gone with the links to the intelligence community. I noted a lot of similarities between Jonestown and Granada. In Jonestown, there were 400 bodies. The first count, they actually counted 400 bodies, and then lo and behold, there were 914. In Granada, there were these graves and they're mass graves also, the Jonestown people. In Granada, a driver of a truck who took the bodies there took an American official to these graves where there were 100 to 200 people. And then, lo and behold, after these news articles come out that there are these graves, first it's 100, then it's 200, then they say, well, no, there's nobody there. There were just four people. Now, that's impossible. It's a numeral problem in reverse. One, there's too few, and then they have doubled the amount, which I think fled out and then were brought back and had to be killed, and that's why the body count doubled in Jonestown. In this case, they couldn't come up with the body count because there were too many people, and Ronald Reagan had said, we went in without killing one civilian. Now, the mental hospital had 180 patients, and allegedly 50 were killed, which leaves 130, and 30 to 40 wandered off, about 30 wandered somewhere. And several articles had that story. That would leave about 100, which would be, if they all had to be dead before the Americans came in, they could be in that mass grave, because the story of the murders didn't appear for 6 days, and it only broke because somebody in the Barbados said something in Canada, and Ronald Reagan had been documented to say there were no civilians. Now, Maurice Bishop gave a speech in 1980, which he said the CIA and these mercenaries, these hired killers, think of us as animals. We're not people. We're animals. They'll kill us like animals. And that's what Hitler did with the mentally sick and the crippled and the people that he didn't like. They weren't the right shape or religion. So in this case, there's 180 people in the mental hospital. And as I mentioned earlier on the talk show and repeat now, the Americans had helicopters flying over that building, and they invaded in the morning, early in the morning, and the helicopters flew over this particular mental hospital, according to the nurses or people there, the orderlies, and no doctor from there has been interviewed, which is interesting. Nobody in conjunction with that flew over there, and several times. Then the afternoon, when Mr. Schoon, the man who's now running the island and the martial law, was on the American Army ship with the United States Army, they gave orders to the Navy to bomb the hospital, and four bombs fell plunk on that building. And the excuse for saying we didn't know anybody was there was that they said they went by there and there was no commotion. Well, wouldn't you want to know, if you gave orders to bomb a place, wouldn't you want to see if there's a sniper or somebody injured or get somebody to a hospital or see if you're going to be shot in the back? So this hospital, the people that were there, for some reason, I believe, were objects of experimentation. Ronald Reagan did that at the Topanga. He wanted to do it with Jolly West when he was governor in Topanga Canyon. There was an empty night base, and I have the correspondence and the documents in Jolly West and the UCLA doctors. These very refined, known doctors living in Los Angeles and prominent in the faculty of the university were going to take people from California prisons and put electrodes in their heads and children of minorities, children of blacks and Indians, and see why they're violent and so forth. So if you can do that, right in Los Angeles with a faculty like that, and the governor of California is giving the go-ahead to Mr. Stubblebine or Dr. Jolly West, and if the governor's your president now, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, all these people are capable and were capable of mind control experiments on these particular islands. And it may be that when the government changed hands and Mr. Bishop maybe was ordered to stay away, I don't think the mayor of Beverly Hills went to the UCLA hospital. I don't think the head of the Westwood Chamber of Commerce knew. So maybe Mr. Bishop didn't know when the government changed hands. Maybe they had to unload all these people because of the horrendous scandal, and that you couldn't know their condition because it turns out that a U.S. Army official took the man who drove the truck and said, dig them out, we've got to get all the bodies out. Now, the similarity to Jonestown is that Mr. Brzezinski gave orders to take off all the identifying tags of the people who were dead. That's from the National Security Council, the orders came, and Brzezinski was lauding the invasion here, that is a stone's throw from Jonestown, and goodness knows what was in the mental hospital. We'll take a one-minute break and then get back to some more on the story of what's going down at the Granada Hospital, because I think it's a lot we can discuss on that matter.